From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A week that began with terrorist bombings at the Boston Marathon, saw gun control battles and explosion in West Texas, is ending with a dramatic manhunt for the marathon bombers. This hour On Point, the latest on the Boston manhunt and more. On Monday, unthinkable carnage at the finish line of the Boston Marathon. Three dead, more than 180 injured in bomb blasts. You'll hear one of the explosions and then an eyewitness. We've had an attack and barriers being overturned.
We've had an attack.
A national outpouring of support followed. The president came and spoke.
It should be pretty clear by now that they picked the wrong city to do it. Not here in Boston.
Then early this morning, more violence and alarm. At 1 a.m., a shootout in neighboring Watertown, Massachusetts, killing one of the two suspects. Here, the sound of gunfire in the night. At this airing, a second suspect still at large and lockdown around the city of Boston. This hour On Point, a special edition of our Friday News Roundtable as the news unfolds. With us now from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point news analyst Jack Beatty is here. Hello, Jack. What a week.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us.
Hello, Tom.
And from Cambridge, Massachusetts, epicenter of the overnight, well, along with Watertown, of the overnight and ongoing manhunt is Kevin Cullen, Metro columnist for the Boston Globe. Kevin, thank you for being with us. Where are you now, Kevin, and what are you seeing?
I'm in between Watertown and Cambridge. Tom, the one thing that I just found out, and I'm pretty sure it's true, is a report that these kids were Chechens is not right. I just talked to a kid that went to Rinjan Latin High School with Jahars on it. He said they are from Kyrgyzstan. It's not Kazakhstan. It's Kyrgyzstan. And that's a place, a former Soviet republic. It's also one of the poorest. I just looked up where it is, and it's a landlocked country in Central Asia. And a lot of what he told me makes sense, because we know that Jahar was a terrific wrestler at Rinjan Latin, and wrestling is sort of the Kyrgyz national sport besides soccer. That's the sport they're best in. They've actually medaled in the most recent Olympics in Greco-Roman wrestling.
Kevin, if we may, let's just back up for 1 second. So we're talking about, we have these images that were released by the FBI just after 5 p.m. yesterday, and then overnight these very dramatic developments in Boston, and names released, Jakar Tsarnaev and brother Tamerlan Tsarnaev, 19 and 26, the older brother dead after gunfire overnight, the younger brother, the subject of this intense manhunt all over Boston, lockdown in Boston. The governor saying, stay behind your locked door, to all residents of Boston and many communities around. Have you ever seen anything like this in this city, Kevin?
It's a bad movie, Tom. And worse, I just got a text message from a police officer I know in Somerville. I know the MIT cop, the kid that was shot. His name is Sean Collier. The last time I saw Sean, he was a civilian working for the Somerville Police Department, and he told me how excited he was. He said he just got on the job at MIT. That must have been a year or two ago, he told me that.
MIT police officer Sean Collier, 26 years old, killed in gunfire overnight. A transit police officer, 33-year-old Richard Donahue, Jr., wounded. It has been an intense night for our listeners around the country. Describe the scene of the sweep and manhunt in Watertown, Massachusetts, just outside Boston, Kevin.
Well, I think you might have even seen some video or some audio of the shootout last night. And that was, I think, when Richie Dunne, the transit cop, was shot, and when Tamerlan received his fatal wounds. I talked to a state police officer earlier this morning who was involved in this. He said it was... he told me it was a bad Jason Bourne movie. That these guys apparently had, he thinks they had explosives. He assumes they were grenades because they were being thrown from a moving vehicle. Now, the timeline of this, Tom, is that there was a disturbance at a convenience store in Kendall Square bordering the MIT campus. That's when poor Sean, oh my God, Sean responds to that, and he didn't even get out of his car. They shot him in the car.
Yeah.
They went from there. They carjacked somebody. They took a car, I think, on Memorial Drive after they shot Sean.
This is very near MIT along the Charles River, just across the river from Boston proper.
Right. They ran down toward the river to Memorial Drive. It sounds like they carjacked somebody driving a Mercedes SUV. And for whatever reason, they didn't harm that person. But the state cop I talked to thinks that person was with them for quite a long time, but was eventually released unharmed. So fast forward to about 1 o'clock in the morning in Watertown. I think it was near Willow Street. I'm not even sure. I guess you call it the arsenal section of Watertown. They cornered these guys, or there's a firefight. And I heard some audio. As the state cop told me, he said it was like out of a movie.
We have some of that audio. This was from a Watertown resident. We heard it, but let's hear again just to hear the intensity of this firefight. Just 10 seconds here. Kevin Cullen with the Boston Globe. What are authorities saying about how these two young men were, or the one remaining alive, are armed? That is heavy gunfire. We know the authorities have that. What about the arms on the other side?
They clearly had weapons. There were two police officers shot. Sean was shot fatally. Richie Dunne was in critical condition, the transit officer. These guys had, given the gun debate we've had this week, Tom, it's pretty ironic when you think about it, that these kids, apparently Tamerlan's older. I think the initial reports had him at 20. The kid I met from Ridge and Latin said the brother was much older. He said he was 25 or 26.
26 is the latest report we're seeing.
That jives with what the kid from Cambridge told me. They had, like I said, it sounds like the other thing, and it wasn't confirmed, but the state cop I talked to earlier this morning thinks that they threw another pressure cooker out the window at them, and then it bounced on the street and exploded.
He
believes they had grenades because perhaps they were IEDs of some sort. And when they brought Tamerlan to Beth Israel, and the other irony, I think there's 12 people that were harmed, that were hurt very badly in the marathon bombing.
Yes.
He goes into the same hospital as them. And they found a trigger on him. And I think that's why they're presuming that Jahar might have an explosive attached to himself.
But you're talking about the older brother. There were reports that he had injuries consistent with some kind of explosive, which may have been near or on him. In all of this, we must say this is a very fluid, unfolding story. There are so many details that cannot be confirmed.
I can't confirm. I'm just telling you who I got it from. I got it from a state cop of this stuff who was at this. He was there.
Kevin, talk about the scale of the security sweeps and police action going on now in and around Boston, the sheer scale of it.
It's unprecedented. Basically, Tom, I added up the towns involved. We're talking about a million people who are locked down, who have been told to stay in their houses and don't open their doors unless it's a clearly uniformed police officer. I can't think of another case in the United States and where a million people were essentially held hostage. And that's the other concern about wherever this kid might be holed up. I know they have a place in Watertown surrounded. And there's obviously a concern for a hostage situation. If this kid, obviously desperate, potentially suicidal, is holed up with innocent civilians.
Kevin Cullen with the Boston Globe, please stand by. I have a colleague from WBUR. We're looking at the enormous manhunt, unprecedented lockdown in Boston going on right now. Three deaths, many wounded earlier this week, of course, in the bombing. But the manhunt itself has taken on stupendous proportions here. My colleague John Peck from WBUR lives in Watertown, which has been the main focus of the manhunt. In the night, Jonathan, thank you for joining us. You had these enormous number of security all around your house. What happened?
It's pretty quiet now, Tom. Actually, we're hearing a helicopter fly low overhead. My wife just saw a couple FBI guys in our neighbor's yard in our back.
After sheltering in your cellar, why? Describe when it was at the heat of this, the thick of it in the night, John.
Right, so we were awoken in our sleep by what sounded like fireworks, which is not uncommon in this neighborhood. We have kids who light up fireworks across the street in this field. Following a series of pops, we heard a very large boom sound, thinking that was their finale, hoping that was their finale, and then the popping noises continued, and it became clear that there was a gunfight going on, and there were two other large explosions, One of them was significantly, you know.
We have just a minute before the break. Describe the scale of the police presence around your house.
At different times throughout the night, we had 50, seemed like special forces guys going through every nook and cranny of our lawn and the field across the street, and they've come in waves. We've seen them in camo. We've seen them in black gear. Some of them are FBI. Some of them are ATF. Some of them are from Cambridge Police, Boston Police. Revere Police came by with the K-9 units. There's been a steady police presence. Up until 15 minutes ago, we had state police with shotguns lining my street, but I don't see them there now.
John Peck, standby. Jack Beatty, the sheer scale of what's unfolding in Boston at this hour, and we may have listeners hearing this at different times, but just in the aftermath of one attack, the scale of this security effort, just enormous, maybe without precedent in modern times, Jack.
It certainly sounds that way. You'd probably have to go back to wartime conditions in Europe or other places. Certainly the Boston police strike of 1919, that had the National Guard in the street, and it had sort of the downtown area of Boston shut down, but nothing like this, nothing on this all-embracing scale.
Jack Beatty, please stand by. Kevin Cullen with the Boston Globe, my colleague Jonathan Peck. At the end of this week that began with bombings at the Boston Marathon, that saw explosions in Texas, action in Washington, an enormous manhunt underway, we are following unfolding events. You can join us, 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are looking at a rapidly unfolding series of events as we go to air today. At the beginning of this week, of course, bombings at the Boston Marathon. 3 dead, many injured, many maimed. The president coming to Boston in the course of this week to bolster and speak to the city and the nation. At week's end, a massive manhunt underway. One suspect, we should repeat, dead. Another, as we speak at this hour, on the loose. Boston lockdown. It has been an amazing set of hours since last evening when the FBI came out with images, not even identities, just images of two young men walking on Monday in the area of the finish line where the Boston, where the blast eventually occurred. Here's from that briefing just after 5 p.m. yesterday.
After a very detailed analysis of photo, video, and other evidence, we are releasing photos of these two suspects. They are identified as Suspect 1 and Suspect 2. They appear to be associated.
Overnight, much more information coming out, a manhunt coming down around Greater Boston, and serious efforts at keeping the public out of the streets and out of public transportation in order to that the police would operate without risk to more individuals here. Here's from a press conference early this morning saying public transportation being closed down over the whole Greater Boston area.
The governor has immediately suspended all public transportation service on the MBTA system, that is buses and subway. So all public transit services through the MBTA have been immediately suspended.
Universities closed, businesses asked to remain closed. And at the press conference this morning, Governor of Massachusetts Deval Patrick put the entire city of Boston and surrounding towns, including Watertown, effectively on lockdown.
We're asking people to shelter in place, in other words, to stay indoors with their doors locked and not to open the door for anyone other than a properly identified law enforcement officer. And that applies here in Watertown, where we are right now, also Cambridge, Waltham, Newton, Belmont, and at this point, all of Boston, all of Boston.
The city and many surrounding communities. At a press conference early this morning, Massachusetts State Police Chief Timothy Albin told reporters the police were confident they were closing in on the suspects. Of course, more developments since this.
We believe these are the same individuals that were responsible for the bombing on Monday at the Boston Marathon. We believe that they're responsible for the death of an MIT police officer and the shooting of an MBTA police officer. This is a very serious situation that we're dealing with.
One of those young men, now dead, his reported brother still on the loose. Tamerlan Tsarnaev, 26, dead. Jagar Tsarnaev, 19, dead. Kevin Cullen of the Boston Globe is with us. My colleague John Peck from WBUR and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. Kevin, what are you hearing from authorities about the one who remains unapprehended? Do they think that he's within some circle, or do they have any idea where he may be?
No, I mean, obviously, if they knew where he was, for sure, I think that this would come to a head unless we have a hostage situation. But no, I do think they think he's not. He has not got far away. Put it that way. That after that shootout this morning, you know, he fled on foot. So there's got to be an assumption that he probably holed in somewhere, and that he, you know, I don't know what kind of weaponry he has on it. There's a presumption he's armed and dangerous. And again, they're acting on the presumption that this kid is willing to die. And that changes the equation for law enforcement. They have to approach this in a completely different situation than your average criminal that you want to apprehend. But the one thing I must say, Tom, talking to this kid that went to Ringed in Latin with him, this kid, it seems if there's an issue here, he appeared to be following the older brother, because this kid that went to high school with him said he appeared very, very well adjusted. He was on the wrestling team. I think he did well in like the state sectional. This kid said he went to the states, meaning he wrestled at that level. And he also apparently attended UMass Dartmouth, according to this kid, and was one of, I don't know, number of students at Ringe and Latin who actually got scholarships. I don't know if the scholarship was specifically for state schools, but I don't know if he was still at UMass Dartmouth, but that's what this kid, who really clearly knew him. I mean, he said the name to me before I even asked him.
Yeah.
So this kid clearly knew Jahar, and that's how he pronounced it. He pronounced
Jahar.
It Jahar.
Kevin, stand by. My colleague Martha Biebinger is with us from WBUR, reporter here who's been following this all night. Martha, at this point, I mean, you've been looking very widely here. Kevin's in the streets, and it's great to hear what he's hearing. But what do we know about the profiles of these two young men, these two brothers?
Tom, we have an update right now that I might share with you. Boston Police Department has put out an alert for a car that they say the suspect may be driving. It's a 99 Honda Gray. Now, if this guy is in a car, you know that there are much fewer controls in place. We've stopped the buses. We've stopped the trains. We have increased restrictions at Logan Airport, but the highways are open. So
we'll have listeners in Boston who can keep their eyes open for that, and others around the country for whom that is far away, and yet the identities of these young men are of great interest. What do we know?
So Jahar is the younger one, as you said, 19. We have information about him as a wrestler, as a very vibrant, involved student at a high school just across the river here in Cambridge. He is a young man with a fair complexion, curly black hair. He was wearing a gray sweatshirt in the last video that we saw him in. He apparently speaks English very well. We don't know as much about his brother, Tamerlan Tsarnaev. He is deceased at this point. He is somebody that went on to Bunker Hill Community College, but we really don't know a whole lot about his character.
Brothers, though, and this question of their background, which Kevin is raising. Is there anything else we know on this front?
I think Carrie has been, if you don't mind, Tom, if we could bring in Carrie Goldberg.
Carrie Goldberg, you, another WBUR colleague who's been following this. You've been reading Izvestia in Russian. And what have you learned, Carrie?
Right. So what Izvestia, this large central newspaper, is reporting is that the suspect, Jahar Tsarnaev, came to America from Makhachkala, which is the capital of Dagestan, which is in Russia. But that up
neighboring
until
Chechnya.
Neighboring Chechnya, yes. But that up until age 7, he lived in Kyrgyzia, which is another country. It used to be another former Soviet
republic.
Is this
Kyrgyzstan? Is that another way of saying
it? Yes, Kyrgyzstan. Okay. Yes, indeed. Yes. So what Izvestia is saying is you can only call him Russian with a big stretch.
Yes.
But that, in fact, he could. None of this speaks to whether, in fact, he is ethnic Chechen, which many people have been saying. So, in other words, he probably is ethnic Chechen, but lived in various places in this crazy, mixed-up former Soviet Union.
All right. Do we know anything, Martha, about what may if these are suspects, but one is now dead, the other is hotly pursued. What may have led them, if indeed, what kind of motivation they might have, or any record or evidence of disgruntlement or anger or worse that would have led to these events this week?
We have some fairly antisocial comments from the older brother, Tamerlan. Less clear, the motive is less clear from the younger brother, unless it was, as you were saying just a little while ago, Tom, the phenomenon of a younger brother following the model of the older brother, essentially being a sort of a protege and using him to maybe do a lot of the dirty work.
We have a little tape here. This interview for the Boston local WBZ-TV and a high school classmate of Dzhokhar Tsarnaev, who wanted to remain anonymous, described the now suspect on the run as an affable student, one she never would have connected with the bombing, even when she saw the photos released by the FBI.
I said to myself, he looks very familiar, but like it wasn't right away because Dzhokhar was so friendly and nice going. I wouldn't connect A and B that he would be a possible terrorist or even hurt a fly for that fact. We went to the same high school senior year. We actually shared a class together. And during that time, he was like the class clown. He would just joke around, try make jokes, get on the teacher's nerve, just like a typical class clown. He was very friendly. Like everyone liked him. No one had any problem with him. And like you would think he was here from America.
A typical class clown wouldn't hurt a fly. They're a high school classmate of one of the suspects. Dzhokhar Tsarnaev still on the loose. Let's go to our listeners, Matt in Hartford, Connecticut. Matt, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
No problem. Thanks, Tom. I have a question for the panel. I was up early this morning, 3:30 in the morning, watching CNN, and saw a video of the older brother being led down the street naked by the police, handcuffed, and then put into squad cars. And now he's dead. So I'm just to the panel, what happened?
Martha, first to you. Yes,
I think there was some confusion, certainly in the early reporting. The person who you saw who was at first held on the ground and then strip searched and put in a car, that is not one of these two brothers. The brother, the older one, was injured in a gunfight, which we heard some of the sound of earlier in the show, and taken to a local hospital where he died. The younger brother is on the loose. The identity and the relationship to the brothers and the man who you're talking about now, we don't yet know for sure.
So who was? We don't know who that was, who was strip searched.
We do not have an identity for him, and we do not understand what his role was on the scene yet.
Kevin Cullen, any insight on that front?
No, I don't know, other than they have taken people away from various addresses. I talked to people in Cambridge, where the area where they live, and was told that a woman in her... This guy said he thought she was in her 50s, and she had a headscarf, and she was taken away with a young child. But I think people are being... It sounds to me that the person we're describing being strip searched and that it might have been... This is the person they went to his house or his apartment, and that the gun battle proceeded from there. The police had traced them to that area of Watertown. And I think I'm thinking this guy is a material witness. But there, I mean, given the fluidity of this and the dangerousness, there are going to be a lot of people who are going to be put down on the ground and have their be strip searched and everything. This is not like an ACLU test case. This is not going to be like that. They have got to get this guy before he kills other people.
In fairness, we should say at this point, this seems to have been rare. It happened. It happened in the night as far as we know, but it's not as if it's happening all over the city, though there is heavy security. Vita in Hopkinton, Rhode Island. Vita, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment on the media's continual characterization of the American psyche as being damaged and feeling impotent and a loss of control and all of these adjectives that are so negative they are self-fulfilling. I feel that the way that this has been handled really reaffirms the American, okay, this has happened, now get to work and get it done attitude. And that's really what we're known for. And that's how I feel. And I think that when we connect this to other things that have happened recently, the turndown of the gun control legislation, part of it is the media constantly telling us that we've lost control, that when something happens, what can we do? That we, you know, we are at the
mercy. Vita, I hear what you're saying. Kevin Cullen, I hear you responding there.
With all due respect, I don't accept that at all. And listen, I will tell the listener, I've been in the street for 5 days now. People I know have been killed. I know that police officer who was just killed this morning. He's a beautiful kid. So don't tell me I'm creating this. You take it any way you want. We're trying to do the best job we can. I have never suggested that our psyche is wounded. I've seen just the opposite. Everybody in town has been walking around. They will not defeat us by killing innocents. And I don't accept this. We are not creating that kind of mentality. And I don't see it. I don't see it. I certainly didn't see it in Boston Garden the other night at the Bruins game. I didn't see it on Newbury Street yesterday, where I thanked every police officer and first responder. And young girls who live on Newbury Street were going up and thanking cops. Nobody's cowed.
Kevin, I have to say I agree. Jack Vita has her impression from watching media, I guess, all over the country. That's her impression. Certainly there's been damaged innocence, further damaged when in the Marathon bombings. That is not an environment in which anybody expected an attack like that. But wounded psyche and impotence, Jack, I have to say I'm not really seeing this week.
No, I mean, that hasn't been the tone at all. There, you know, right from the start, there was the we will be back next year, bigger marathon. You know, this won't disturb the indomitable spirit of Boston. All that was the talk, and it wasn't just the talk. It clearly was the walk, from what Kevin is saying. So I identify this far with our caller. I mean, it has been wall-to-wall coverage on television, and you turn it on, and you just get the fear. You get the vector of fear. Something terrible is happening, and so on. That's not a fault of the media so much as a technological development. They can show it all the time, and they do, and the effect of it is to leave you a kind of numb and perhaps fearful. But what we have seen here is extraordinarily rapid coordination and competence on the part of our security forces. This is just within hours that all this has been done. Tragedy along the way. These terrible ancillary shootings of the young of Sean Collier and Richard Donahue. Look at how fast they moved, and look at the coordination. And so one is impressed not with impotence, but with activity and effectual response.
We are in an age where images travel very fast, and these images out just after 5 p.m. yesterday, and by the middle of the night, things were really underway. Of course, to that point, President Obama at the interfaith ceremony in Boston yesterday to honor those killed and injured, the Boston Marathon bombing, saying, look, yes, this was a whack, but the country, the city, will be back.
We may be momentarily knocked off our feet, but we'll pick ourselves up. We'll keep going. We will finish the race.
Martha Biebinger, your sense, the whole country watching here, lots of support coming in. I mean, road races being organized around the country, Boston strong city, and let's go out and run and contribute to those who were wounded and the families who suffered losses. But in the city itself, the response to this week of violence?
I think there is an amazing resilience rising, although, Tom, I am worried about what today's events will do to that. We were starting to rebound, I think, yesterday with the prayer service that you just played portions of, with the sense of moving towards an arrest, the pictures, and now people are waking up in houses they can't leave. And the damage to the psyche and layering is really getting to be difficult.
I suppose that's there. At the same time, Kevin, that is part of a community keeping its head down so that law enforcement can try and rein this in. It's amazing that these guys did not leave town, apparently.
Isn't that amazing?
Kevin?
It is.
It's incredible. Last night, after they were going through the images, I talked to a federal agent, not an FBI guy, an ATF guy. I said, is there any possibility that they're still around? And he says, if they are, they're stupider than we thought they are. So I think even the law enforcement people were really surprised. Clearly, if the FBI, they had images for a couple of days, and the debate within the Bureau was to put this out, because there's always the danger of vigilanteism when you put a picture out like that. Clearly, when they put that out, Tom, I don't think the FBI thought they were going to find these guys in Cambridge.
And hours later, there was action in the street, one dead, one the subject of an enormous manhunt, and the whole country watching. Kevin Cullen with the Boston Globe, Martha Biebinger from WBUR, and Jack Beatty, please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are following the unfolding story in this hour at the end of an event-filled week of a massive manhunt underway in the Northeast, in Boston, for suspects in the Boston Marathon bombing. One killed overnight. Two brothers, we are told, on the loose, and a massive police effort underway right now. Bostonians and residents of surrounding communities asked by the governor of Massachusetts to stay in their homes. Universities closed. Businesses asked to remain closed. Public transportation shut down. And lots of drama in the streets just in the last, at this point, approaching 10 hours or so. I want to just get a sense from Washington of how this is being watched. Meredith Shiner is with us. She's a staff writer with Roll Call. Meredith, thanks very much for joining us from Washington. What about the attention of the nation's capital as this investigation and manhunt unfolds?
Well, and thank you for having me on what I know is an extraordinarily busy day for you guys. So the White House just indicated through a statement provided by a White House official that the president at 9:45 a.m. with the vice president convened a meeting and briefing on what's happening in Boston in the White House Situation Room. Some of the key officials who are at this briefing are Attorney General Eric Holder, FBI Director Robert Mueller, Chief of Staff, a lot of the other national security advisors, video conferencing in, our Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano, Secretary of State John Kerry, and CIA Director John Brennan. So this is currently underway. The White House has not given an indication that this meeting has ended yet. And so obviously this is something that politicians and lawmakers are paying close attention to. As your listeners might not know, because they've been so embroiled in this story, there have been some security scares in Washington this week with this envelope of this substance ricin that was sent both to the president and a senator to his Capitol Hill office. So obviously people here in Washington are on high alert, but have been watching with great interest what's happening in Boston. And clearly this is something that the president is paying very close attention to as well.
So a focus well beyond Boston. I'm looking here. A train stopped, an Acela train searched and cleared, a Boston to New York Acela train earlier today between Westport and Norwalk, Connecticut, after a passenger on board alerted authorities that the wanted Boston suspect might be on board. Of course, after those images came out, all kinds of reports, thousands flooding in, one that led to a stopped and ultimately cleared train there between Boston and New York. Meredith Shiner with Roll Call in Washington, thank you very much for being with us.
Yes, stay safe today.
Let's get a call here from New York. Glen Falls, New York. Paul is calling. Paul, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, my heart and thought is with those who have been injured and who have lost loved ones. But I'm concerned the way in which the coverage is going about. As Jack mentioned earlier, we are absolutely resilient. We are absolutely strong on this, and we're giving these reprehensible individuals more exposure for having accomplished a shutting down of a city, for bringing the president, as you were just talking with the guest from Washington, bringing the president and his top advisors together. These guys failed. They had four bombs. Only two of them went off. Thank God that the injuries were not more severe. They only hurt three people. Now, unfortunately, they've shot these other two individuals. But we're sending a message that these guys are accomplishing so much more than they have. We are so much stronger than these people. We, as a society, are so much more resilient. And I wanted to bring that comment up and seek the response of your crew.
Paul, I hear what you're saying, but let's be clear. Three dead on that day, four with another police officer, another seriously injured, 180 injured, many very grievously wounded in that attack on Monday. I mean, there's a lot of conversation about what's the right level of attention and are we magnifying the significance of these. On the other hand, this is a law enforcement effort to apprehend them. That is a lot of damage to a lot of lives on Monday. It's not as though you want to sweep it under the rug, do you, Paul?
No, by no means. I absolutely agree with that. And I wanted to start my comments by saying, obviously, my thoughts are there. But I do think that from the perspective of someone who wants to perpetrate this kind of stuff, they're interested in attention. And so when we lose the focus that it's about the individuals who are in the hospitals who are injured, I'd like to hear from them. I'd like to hear how they're doing. I'd like to hear how their families are doing, more so than the minutiae of whether this guy is Chechenian or not.
Listen, I have to say, on this day, these things don't seem to me like minutiae. I guess I take your point, Paul. But at the same time, people want to understand, why did this happen? Where are the perpetrators? If there's one still there, a suspect, how can he be apprehended before more lives are damaged? Jack Beatty, there is always this tension. This is the inevitable fallout of a terrorist attack on the one hand, a need to address the attack and attackers on the other, the desire not to magnify in such a way that the very terrorism itself looms even larger.
Yes, and I think that there's been a consistent effort on the part of the media and certainly on the part of officials to emphasize the other side. We talked about this, the spirit of people. The president spoke about, you know, you can't do that to this city. And also what we've just seen this morning, the extraordinary level of civic cooperation. You know, this is not just a police effort. This is a social effort. People are staying home. People are doing what they're told. They're not doing it out of some, you know, fear of big government, but out of civic cooperation, out of citizenship. And that is a testament, it seems to me, to the strength of those bonds in the greater Boston area.
A sense of pulling together. Dan in Portland, Maine. Dan, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Just another perspective for you to consider. If these two young men who are suspected of bombing at the Boston Marathon were brazen enough to pull off something like that, there really isn't a guarantee that they would have any desire to leave Boston. After that, anyway, you know, it is an assumption and somewhat of a leap to say they would want to commit this crime and then run. You know, they might have had more things planned. They may just not be thinking in the way that that all of us are thinking. You know, and all those who are holed up in their homes are thinking. Just a different perspective.
Dan, I appreciate your call, Kevin Cullen. I mean, yes, there you have a sense: commit crime, get out of town. On the other hand, Dan is right to point out we don't know the boundaries of this. We don't know if these indeed were the perpetrators. We don't know if there may have been others involved. What about the boundaries of this case, Kevin? What are you hearing from authorities?
Well, obviously, I think there's a rethought going on now, Tom, because they didn't run. They probably didn't run because that would have called attention to themselves. Everybody would have said, hey, where the heck did Tamerlan go? So it's still early in this, so we don't know exactly what their motivations were. Although there was WBZ, somebody sent me a link to this. There's a great producer, a news guy over there, Peter Wilson. And Peter got a hold of their uncle down in Maryland, where apparently some of their relatives live. And that he said that Tamerlan had reached out to him only recently and almost with regret, suggesting that as a family they had drifted apart. And the uncle was reported by WBZ, I have the link right in front of me now, saying that Tamerlan told him that he was delving deeper into his religion, that he was delving deeper into Islam, and that the uncle was, like, confused by that because that was new. He didn't think that that was a big deal to this kid. So that's definitely an area of the investigation that the authorities will go down now. But the image I'm getting of the kid that's holed up somewhere is that he was kind of a goofy, almost Americanized kid, and he seemed to have friends. Apparently somebody told one of our reporters at the Globe that he didn't like America. But I'm thinking about this. This kid lived in probably, I don't know, a more tolerant place in America than Cambridge. I don't know it, and we all know, Jack, you know this, Tom, you know this, Martha, we know what Cambridge is. Cambridge is a special place, and it reaches out to immigrants probably better as an institution, as a government, than any place I can think of. And the idea that this kid might have harbored anti-American attitudes, and yet they somehow developed while he lived in what I consider the most tolerant stretch of Massachusetts, if not the United States. That just blows my mind.
And yet it's a big world with a lot of currents, some of them very hot running through it. Reports today that the older brother, now dead, had said he did not have a single friend in America. You mentioned WBZ-TV here in Boston. They spoke with the uncle of these two, Alvi Tsarni, saying that he was deeply troubled by what he'd heard about his nephews. Here's some of that tape of their uncle.
I am wordless. The people who did it, they do not deserve even existing on this earth. They do not deserve to exist on this earth. That's what I think.
And more from the uncle, saying he'd talked with the older brother at one point, Tamerlan, that Islam had come up. Here's the uncle again from WBZ-TV.
That was in 2009 when I spoke with Tamerlan. And we started when I just asked what he's doing, and he started telling me about some that he's been in Islam. I told him, listen, Islam always been there. You just do your business, work, go to school, be useful. Know why you came to America.
Alvid Sarni, uncle of the two suspects, one now dead, talking there with WBZ-TV. Courtney in Shelburne, Vermont is calling. Courtney, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. It brings to question, these boys were young when the U.S. was involved and the conflicts in Chechnya. Has this left a lasting impression with them and this hatred for the U.S.? As they've grown somewhere in the recesses of their psyche. And then, you know, as the U.S. is involved in other conflicts, are we in these children now creating these enemies and affecting these kids as they grow up? Is this going to create a whole new generation now of kids who will have these deep-rooted hatred for the U.S. It's a frightening thought.
Yeah, Courtney, let us pick it up right there. I mean, Jack Courtney walks us out into a region. You can understand where she's coming from. There's been a lot of trouble in the world. Chechnya has seen a lot of trouble. There are these questions about exactly their ties, ethnic, otherwise, or none to Chechnya. They apparently lived in different parts of the former Soviet Union, Russia. But some kind of regional tie to a region that's been troubled, a region that has an Islamic presence. And yet, you know, in high school, in as Kevin Cullen says, in a very tolerant corner of the United States, I mean, are we in an era, Jack, where these flows of images, of anger, of energy, even some blowback from American involvement, but not only that, look at the Russian heavy boot in Chechnya, where these things can come into the heart of an American city.
Yes, and sort of trump or wash away the effect of Americanization, which in Cambridge, as Cullen suggests, would be gentle indeed. I mean, this is, he's quite right. This is among the most tolerant cities in the United States. People can't be, we saw this, didn't we, with Major Hassan. There was somebody in the army, wasn't he a physician, I believe? Anyway,
yes,
he was just infected by what he was reading on the web. It radicalized him, and it made him a killer. There's no way of sort of holding back the bacillus of this kind of, if it's blowback or revenge or simply jihad, unmotivated, whatever it is, with the internet, there's no holding it back. And it is terribly unfortunate, I think, for Muslim Americans, people from the Middle East generally, to have to carry around even I'm not blaming Courtney, but I think the suspicion that she talks about is something a lot of people think about. I mean, are these people being somehow, is their religion, is their ethnic background somehow, feeding into and souring them on the American experience? Are they, and all this is a terrible burden for such people to bear.
I'm looking here at a report of a YouTube account identified as belonging to the older brother, now dead after the overnight shooting, Tamerlan Tsarnaev. And posted videos there over some months. Mother Jones Adam Serwer has been looking at this account and reporting videos refer to end time beliefs, some radical Islamic theology, the prophecy of the black banners of Khorasan, popular in Al Qaeda circles, and another video denouncing the Harry Potter series for teaching children paganism. And others not necessarily ideological at all, one featuring a chameleon changing colors as different objects are placed next to it. This is a YouTube account identified as belonging to one of these brothers. Martha, you hear that? We live in a media world that is borderless. And these guys, with their family background, even with their feet planted in this country, like many others, open to a whole world of influences.
And, Tom, if Chechnya is the threat that we should have imagined, I think everybody in Boston is shocked at that. We did not expect, if we were thinking that there was somebody who was going to act out that resentment that you're talking about, it was not Chechnyans.
Well, yes, though whether it was, you know, that specifically or more broadly. John Peck, you've been with us. I mean, overnight, you were on the receiving end of the security sweep that we saw here. At the height of this, what were you and your wife saying to each other as SWAT teams and more crawled through your yard on the outskirts of Boston, John?
We were saying to ourselves that we're thankful to have heroes like these guys in law enforcement, guys and women in law enforcement protecting us in this neighborhood. It was clear that they were collaborating across the departments. I spoke to several of them as they were in my front yard, my backyard. They came to my door. Just looking in the eyes of these guys, you could tell that this guy was going to be found, that these people were going to lay their lives on the line to protect myself and my wife. And that was really comforting feeling and very inspiring and the best thing that we've taken away from this whole situation.
A still unfolding story, a massive manhunt, a city and more in lockdown. One suspect, dead, another still sought. Very dramatic developments overnight as the whole country, the world, look on. Grateful to all of you for being with us this hour. Jonathan Peck, my WBUR colleague, thank you. Martha Biebinger, reporter with us in the studio, thank you very much, Martha. Kevin Cullen with the Boston Globe in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Kevin, thank you for joining us this hour.
Thanks, Tom.
And Jack Beatty, as always, thanks for being with us. A very unusual week. So much going on. West Texas, the big explosion there. The big gun bill in the Senate that went nowhere. There will be days. But as we speak today, an unfolding story that we share in this hour. Jack, thanks for being with us. Listeners, thank you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.